Mark. If you want to hear the original version, you can go on YouTube. That's not original to us, but you pull it off so well. We were waiting for the wig to pop out, but it didn't happen yet, huh? I like the part about you being so buff and handsome. Am I right about that, Miss Amy? Judges chapter number 13. I want to begin a series this morning studying the life of Samson, you know. His story begins in the book of Judges and in chapter number 13. And though it's kind of an unusual story, this morning I want to take a look at the entire chapter. And I promise you that that doesn't mean it's going to be a long message. It just means that we're going to go really, really fast as we can. It's an interesting beginning considering what we know about Samson. In fact, when I just mention the name Samson, I'm certain that most of you, immediately your minds run to Delilah, as in Samson and Delilah. And you know the story about how Samson fell into this awful tragedy, and he told Delilah his secrets, and she cut off all of his hair, and he became weak, and the Philistines overpowered him and took him, and there he was forced to work in a mine. But, you know, what's interesting about the story of Samson is that, you know, Samson didn't just one day wake up and decide that he was going to fall into this trap. He didn't just wake up one day and decide that he was going to tell this woman his secret. But rather, what we see in the life of Samson is a series of compromises. That is, that he made decisions, conscious decisions along the way that ultimately led to this moment that we know so much about. Now, what I want to do this morning is I want to show you Samson's beginnings. You may find out something that you didn't know about Samson. In fact, you may even see a little bit of yourself in his story. See, Samson came into the world full of promising beginnings. First of all, Samson came into the world at a time when the people of God desperately needed a hero. In verse number 1, the Bible records, "And the people of Israel, they did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years." For those of you who may not be familiar with the book of Judges, let me kind of fill in a few of the gaps. The book of Judges is basically the story of what happened to the people of God, Israel, when they inherited the promised land. Now, you may remember what the promised land was. It was the land that God had promised the people of Israel all the way back to the time of Abraham. God had told Abraham that he was going to give him a land, and he was going to give him this descendants, these amount of descendants, that if Abraham could number the stars in the heavens, that amount of descendants would fill up this land. And so the people had been for some time looking forward. But you know what happened? The people ended up in Egypt, and there they were held in bondage and in slavery. And eventually Moses would come, and Moses would deliver them out through the powerful hand of God, and they would do signs and wonders. And then they would come out, and they would wander around in the wilderness for 40 years. But after that 40 years, and after Moses had passed away, and Joshua was now the leader, the people actually inherited that which they had been longing for some 600 years, the promised land itself. Well, the book of Judges is basically an account telling us about what happened after Joshua's death and how the people were to go forward in the promised land to gain more ground, to hold on to that which they had, and just basically a historical account of what was taking place. And what we find in the book of Judges is an interesting thing, and that is that the people in Israel, once they came into the promised land, they still struggled with the same things they struggled with before they got there. If they were people like our people today, what they probably thought was when we get to the promised land, everything's going to be perfect. But when they actually got there, they found out things weren't quite as perfect as they might have imagined they would be. They thought when they got to the promised land that magically all of the problems, all of the struggles, all of the bondage, it would just fall its way off and everything would be perfect and everything would be wonderful. But when they got to the promised land, they found out that the problems that they had had before, they had merely brought those things into the promised land with them, and they were still there. They would have moments of devotion and dedication to the Lord, times of real revival in this land, but then they would be followed shortly thereafter with times of failure. I can kind of relate to the book of Judges because I see a lot of myself, and even I see a lot of our churches, and I see a lot of the United States of America in the book of Judges. There are times it seems like when as a nation we get so close to the Lord and we really decide we're going to commit to Him and decide that we're going to dedicate our lives. I was reading a statistic about how after the Normandy invasion that churches were just flooded with folks praying, and after 9/11, after those attacks, that following Sunday, church attendance was at record highs. But then over time, and after a little bit of time passes by and we have time to kind of forget what has taken place, well, all of a sudden we start moving away from God again and we begin to think we can live lives on our own terms. Well, that's how the Israelites were. They would have these moments where real spiritual revival would take place, sometimes in the midst of tragedy. They would draw close to the Lord, and then all of a sudden, right after those moments had passed, then they would begin to fall away and they would begin to not serve him any longer. You see, the problem when they got there was the problem that they'd always had. And the problem was that the people of Israel had rebellious hearts, and therefore they would have these moments of success followed by moments of failure. This problem would continue to plague Israel. In fact, when they went into their Babylonian captivity, again, you remember that God told Ezekiel, the only way that a remnant is going to exist is if I change their hearts. Until the people's hearts were changed, they were going to continue to struggle down these roads. In verse number one, it tells us that Samson came at a time when the people of Israel, they were being punished for a season of failure. It opens with the line, it says, and the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Now, it doesn't tell us right there in that verse exactly what it was that the people had done that had made the Lord angry, but we can kind of draw an inference. If you read the entire book of Judges, probably what this phrase is associated with is when they began to serve other gods. For example, in chapter number 2, verse number 11, the same phrase is used when it says that the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and it says, and served Baals. That would be Israel's trademark for many years. Even, it's almost as though when they left Egypt, they brought what they had learned in Egypt with them. And so until God could deal with this problem, until the people learned that there was one God, that God was their God and they were his people and that they needed only to worship him, this would be a problem that would plague them for centuries. It'd be a problem that would plague the people long after the time of David and Solomon and the list of kings that would follow thereafter. You see, they would have these moments of brief revival like in the times of Josiah, and then they would be followed by years of disobedience when the people would turn away from the one true God and they would turn to these pagan gods. And that's exactly what apparently is going on here in Judges chapter 13. The people have begun to serve another God, and God is not happy about this. He's angered by this. This is his people, and he is their God. And he said, in this place I'm going to make my glory dwell, my name dwell. I'm giving you my name. And the people were muddying it up. They were making it bad. They were putting shame on God because they were willing to serve other gods. See, God had demanded that they give his glory to nobody else, that they were only to worship him. But the writer says that they didn't do that, and so the Lord punished them. He says, in fact, that he gave them to the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. Now, in the Old Testament, the Philistines, they are the epitome of the enemy of God. You can fill in the blank of who that might be today, but they are essentially the epitome, the worst of the worst. They are the most vile of offenders. They are God's enemies. They hate God. They hate everything about God. They hate everything about the people of God. They are God's enemies. And yet in this moment, the writer says that God delivered his people over to the hand of the Philistines to punish them because they had decided to anger him by worshiping other gods. You see, it's an age-old problem where the righteous seem to fall and the wicked begin to fail. The Philistines were a picture of a sinful culture, a pagan culture, and yet God allowed them to rule over his people, to have military success over them for 40 years. And the reason he did so was because he was attempting to teach them a lesson. He was trying to show them, what you are doing is not going to work. It's only going to anger me. And so for 40 years, the people of the Lord, they're held at bay. They're suffering loss after loss at the hands of the enemies of God. And they were probably wondering at some point if God had finally cursed them or just forgotten them, all about them completely. Don't you think over 40 years, I mean, you're talking an entire generation. Over 40 years, don't you think there were saints of God on their knees begging God, God, please give us victory today. Please don't let the Philistines take any more ground. God, please do get us out from underneath their hand. God, please, 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 don't you know they are your enemy and we're your people? Why would you do this? For 40 years, this goes on and on and on and on. And the people were probably beginning to wonder, has God forgotten all about us? Yeah, we know our fathers sinned. Yeah, we know that they worshiped the Baals, but what about us? 40 years have passed by. Are you ever going to deliver us? Well, what we learn in the next series of verses is that God had not forgotten his people. No, in fact, what he was doing was he was sending them a hero, someone to deliver them, and his name would be Samson. Now, Samson's birth, it was a newsworthy event. Over the next couple of weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to study how Samson went from being newsworthy to wonder boy, or newsboy to wonder boy to playboy to jail boy. We're going to see that transition in his life. But the first thing I want to show you this morning is how newsworthy his birth was. First, it was newsworthy because Judges 13 tells us that he came to a family that was barren. Interestingly enough, if you read the story here in Judges 13, we are not told Samson's mother's name. Now, she seems to play a pivotal role in all of this, but we don't even know what her name was. Isn't that interesting to you? And we're told his father's name was Manoah, and that he hailed from Zorah, from the tribe of Dan. But the next line tells us that Samson's mother was barren. Maybe that could be just why the writer decides not to put her name in there. I don't really know. But whatever it is, Samson's mother and father are barren. They can't have any children. Now, you know by now that in the Old Testament, barrenness, that was a sign of God's curse. It was a sign that there was sin inside that family. And so this woman, whatever her name was, her and her husband Manoah, in their community, they were probably viewed as cursed by God, as people who were sinners, people that God didn't care about, people that God hated, as it were, because they couldn't bear any children. But all of that was about to change. In verse number 3, it tells us that the angel of the Lord appeared to this woman and told her that she would bear a child. So the first thing that makes Samson's birth so newsworthy was that he was born to a woman who could not have any children. The second thing that makes it so newsworthy is who it was that delivered this message, or who it was that told this woman that she was about to give birth. In verse number 3, it says, and the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman. In verse number 6, she goes to her husband and she says, a man of God came near to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. I like that last phrase. Very awesome. It means it was magnificent. It was too much for me to take in. Manoah, then he goes to the Lord and he asks him to send the messenger back in verse number 8. And in verse number 9 it says, and God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman as she sat in a field. Now in each of those verses you're going to notice that it does not say an angel of the Lord, but rather it says the angel of the Lord. Now why is that significant? Well, the reason that's significant is in the Old Testament, that is a sign to the reader that it is not merely a regular messenger of God, a regular angel, but rather God himself has come into the building. Watch what happens next. This mysterious messenger, he appears again to Manoah's wife there in the field, and she runs and she goes and she gets Manoah, and together they run out to the man there in verse number 11. And Manoah says to her, or to him, are you the man who spoke to this woman? Now, this is a seemingly obvious question, right? I mean, some crazy guy is talking to your wife out in a field. You want to know who he is, right? Are you the woman who's talking to my wife out in this field? And the messenger responded with an interesting thing. He says, I am. You remember who else said I am in the Old Testament? There was a time when Moses was sent and he was given his instructions to go and deliver the people out of Egypt and that God would go with him. And Moses says, whom shall I tell the people sent me? And you remember what God's response was? Tell them that I am has sent you. On many times, on many occasions, Jesus with his apostles, he let them know that I am was in the building. In verse number 12, again, he is referred to as the angel of the Lord. In verse 15, again, he's referred to as the angel of the Lord. And this time, Manoah says, please, let us detain you and prepare a young goat for you. In other words, Manoah says, man, you're a pretty special dude. You keep appearing out of nowhere, and you're awesome, you know? So maybe you should come over to my house and have dinner with me, right? I'm going to get a goat. And I'd have said, if I was the angel of the Lord, a goat? Give me some prime rib, Manoah. I just brought you some good news. But Manoah says, I'm going to get a goat. I'm going to prepare that goat, and I'm going to come on over and have dinner. Listen to what happens. He says, in verse number 16, it says, and the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, if you detain me, I will not eat your food. He says, but if you prepare a burnt offering, then offer it to the Lord. You know what he does in that moment? He responds by telling Manoah that he can only offer a sacrifice to him. He says, I don't want your food. I don't want to eat with you. But I'll tell you what you can do. You can offer a sacrifice. Beloved, who do you offer sacrifices to? Only to God. So you know what's important about this is Manoah was learning that this was not just an angel. It wasn't just a man. It wasn't just a prophet or a messenger. Somebody else was there. Manoah asked, "What is your name?" And in verse number 18, the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful?" In the Hebrew, it means that it's too great to express. He's saying, you want to know what my name is, but my name's so great, I can't even tell you what it is. It's too marvelous for you. Verse number 20, another miracle happens. And when the flame went up, they offered the sacrifice, right? Toward heaven from the altar, the angel of the Lord appeared or went up in the flame of the altar. Now Manoah and his wife were watching and they fell on their faces to the ground. Why do you fall on your face? You are scared to death, right? Verse number 22, and Manoah said to his wife, "We shall surely die, for we have seen God." This was not just a normal revealing, right? This was not just a normal putting it on Facebook, hey, we're having a baby. This was somebody else showed up on the scene. This wasn't even just a regular angel, but somebody else showed up on the scene. Who was that? Well, as New Testament believers, we believe it was the second person of the Trinity, because they say he appears in the form of a man and he's mighty and awesome. The second person of the Trinity called Jesus Christ. Jesus appeared to Manoah and his wife in this moment and said, "You're going to have a baby." Now that's a revealing, right? Anybody else had Jesus show up at your door and say, "You're going to have a baby"? Listen, I prayed for a lot of things. I'm not going to pray for him to do that today, all right? Listen, we all want to reveal babies, but listen, Jesus showed up and he said to Manoah and his wife, "You're going to have a baby, and you need to understand this is not just a regular man in front of you. You can make sacrifice to me." That's newsworthy. Third thing that was newsworthy about Samson's birth is the instructions that were given to his parents. In verse number 5, his parents were told that a no razor shall come upon his head. And the reason was because it says that he was going to be a Nazarite. You know, the word Nazarite, it comes from a Hebrew meaning to separate or to set apart. In other words, his mother was to separate or to set apart this young man, this young lad. He was God's and only God's for his entire life. His mother, according to verse 3 and 4, was to have no wine. She wasn't to have defiled things, because not only did God want this child separated after his birth, but God wanted this child separated from the very womb. He wanted him separated to be used by God from before the time that he ever came into the world. As a Nazarite, Samson had a vow that he could not drink wine. He couldn't cut his hair and he couldn't touch dead bodies. And so everybody says, "Who wants to touch dead bodies?" Well, that means he couldn't be a hunter, right? He couldn't be a fisher unless he, But anyway, he couldn't do any of those things as long as the bodies were dead. And all of this, God says, this angel, Jesus, says to Manoah and his wife is so that he will be set apart wholly for the Lord's service. So you know what I think when I read all this? I think Samson got off to a really great start, didn't he? He came as a hero on the scene. He's a blessing to barren parents. He's announced by Jesus himself. And now we're told that before his birth, he is set apart by God. He is every church kid that you've seen in church, right? He's got all of the world. He's full of promise. He's got all of the instructions and potential to be great. Everything that could be that he needed is right there. The fourth and most important newsworthy event of his birth was they were told why he was coming. At the end of verse number 5, it says, "And he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." You know, God had spoken to his people over the years, but they had begun to wonder if God had forgotten about them. Over the 40 years that they were held under the oppression of the Philistines, they had begun to wonder, was God even caring for us anymore? Was he our God and are we his people? And God answers that question there in verse number 5 when he gives the announcement of this baby. He was saying, "I am going to speak to you. I am going to save you through this little lad." In other words, he had answered their prayers. They were looking for someone to come and deliver them from these ungodly pagans. And Samson was God's answer. Samson would be the young man, would be the man that God would raise up and deliver them from the enemies of God. It's interesting because it says that he will begin to save Israel. You see, Samson would not be the final act in this play, but God says in this moment he's going to be the starting point. He would not single-handedly save Israel, but he was promised to turn the page in history. From the previous story of how the people were defeated and how they had been overrun by God's enemies to a story about deliverance. You see, in this moment, you cannot overstate it. Hope had arrived in the form of a baby. And this baby, Samson, he's going to deliver these people. He's going to begin that process. Well, the chapter, it comes to a close, and we think everything's great. Because at the close of the chapter, it says that Samson is born in verse number 24, and the young man grew, and the Lord blessed him. Verse number 25, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. So you get to the end of Judges 13, and you think, man, hope has come. The world's going to be great. Samson has arrived. Israel's going to be delivered. Sin's going to be defeated. The Philistines are all going to go meet Delilah, right? I mean, this is all good. Everything's working out. God has spoken to his people. But the problem is, you know the rest of the story. I want you to, for a moment, put on your imagination with me this morning. Suppose that you did not know about Samson and Delilah. What would you be thinking when you got to the end of chapter number 13? Well, I suppose probably like me, you'd be thinking, this kid has got it made. He's spoiled rotten. He's the only child, and everybody knows that only children are spoiled. Amen. He'll be used by God mightily. He has the world in his hands. He's going to have strength unseen. And you know what? You'd be right. Samson had everything in the world right there in the palm of his hands. He had the most prolific beginning anybody had ever seen. In fact, as I was writing my notes this week, I thought to myself, you know, if it wasn't for the story of Samson and Delilah, you could preach a great message about the typology of Christ in Samson's life. Born of a woman who is barren, born of a woman, born a baby to save the world. I mean, everything seems to fit together. But the problem is that you know that the story went on from there. And like me, you probably wonder this morning, how could a boy who had such promising beginnings end his life so miserably? Beloved, this is the point that I want to make this morning, and then I'll be done. There's both hope and a warning in Samson's beginnings. You see, the hope is seen in that it doesn't matter how you start life. What matters is how you finish life. You may not have had the greatest parents in the world. You might not have had a wonderful family life. You might not have been brought up in church. You kind of fill in the blanks from there. You might say, well, you know, everything in my life was terrible. Everything about your childhood may be bad. But I want you to know that the good news this morning is that the beginning is not the end of your story. It is precisely that. It is just the beginning. You see, if Samson could have had such promise but would fail so miserably, then it must also be possible that if a person who had a miserable beginning could also experience great success. Just because you don't have the right mommy and daddy, and just because you don't have the home life that you thought you should have had, do not allow that to be a crutch. You can get past it. It's just the beginning of the story. You see, it is not the beginning of your life that defines you. What will define your life is all of the choices made between the beginning and the end, specifically the choice about what you will do with Jesus Christ, whether to accept him or reject him. Doesn't matter this morning who mom and dad were. Doesn't matter what the experience was growing up. You can have had the most horrible of beginnings, and you can have a great ending to your life through the person of Jesus Christ and in him alone. And at the same time, you can have a great beginning to life. You can have everything working in your favor. But that can all come crashing down, which leads us to the warning. See, you can have a perfect beginning brought up with loving parents, parents who take you to church every week, but none of that guarantees success. I've seen it 100 times before, and I'm sure you have as well. Children born into great parents filled with lots of promise, the world in the palm of their hands, and all they needed to do was just realize it. And if they just realize it, God could use them for something mighty, something marvelous, something powerful. Students, we've got lots of students in the place this morning. Let me kind of just speak to you directly in this moment. If you went around this room and you spoke to some of the older adults, and I know your parents would say this, I'll bet you that as you listen to their stories, they would tell you about some of the most wonderful experiences in life. They would tell you about things that are great and you're going to get to experience one day, and things that would just capture your imagination. But at the same time, if you could get into their hearts and see their hearts and hear their whole story, I bet you would hear some stories of missed opportunities. things that they wish they had done differently, times when they went one direction and they should have gone another, and they knew it. And the reason that your parents push you so much, the reason your youth minister begs you to seize moments like this, to be active in the youth group, is not because they want to drag you down or burden you with something else. The reason that older folks want to pour into your life is because we know what happens when you don't realize and seize the moments when they are present. Samson was born with everything, but he didn't realize it. Samson had everything right in his life. He had money, he had fame, he had power, he had strength. He was a spoiled little kid. He had everything. But he threw it all away through a series of compromises because he did not seize that one moment, because he didn't seize the opportunities that God had given him. See, Samson's life, it would be full of compromises, and those compromises, well, they would eventually lead to his death. And we're going to look at that in the weeks to come. But I want you to know that each and every person in this place, when you look at the life of Samson, immediately in your mind, you think of a person who had wasted potential. He lived his life, and he wasted everything that God gave to him because he didn't seize the opportunities that the Lord had offered to him. A couple of weeks ago, we went to a track meet. Miss Mariana was running, Brother Luke, Mr. Luke was running, others were running from Smith Cotton. And you know what I noticed is that it's only how the race ends that matters. Now, I know the coaches talk about a whole lot of other things, but for the rest of us who have no idea what's going on, we're not caring about how they started. We look at that little line at the end of the race and we want to see who crosses first. When you play golf, my golf coach used to tell me, he'd say, you know, there's a good thing about a scorecard. It doesn't have room for pictures. What he was trying to teach me is that sometimes you make three bad shots, but you make one good one and you get a right four down and you score to par. The point he was trying to make is sometimes you make terrible mistakes. There's terrible things that go along the way, but what matters is when you got to the end, what did that life matter? The reality is that few ever look at the beginning of a race in human terms. Most of the time when we come to a funeral, they give a brief little paragraph about who you were born to, where you were born. But then the rest of that is all about that dash in between. It's all about what took place in those years and how you finished your life. In fact, most of the time, how you finished your life fills up most of the page because it's what people remember the most. Beloved, my encouragement to you this morning would be this. You may feel like you had a terrible beginning. I've got good news for you. It doesn't matter. The race is not over yet. And I also want you to know that if you had a great beginning and you look at your life and you say, you know what, I'm a little bit like Samson. I had a great beginning and I had all these chances, but I blew it. Listen, I want you to know your race isn't over yet either. You're still here. You've got time to write the final chapter. Samson's story, it's an interesting one to me. Because when you read Judges chapter 13, you think, man, this kid is going to do great things for God. But then all of a sudden, I remember how screwed up it got. And beloved, the reason it got so screwed up was because he didn't seize the opportunities that God gave to him. My challenge to you this week is seize the opportunities that God gives to you, because you're not guaranteed more. When God gives you an opportunity to do something, seize it. Seize the talent that he's given you, because he'll take it away from you if you don't. Stand with me reverently and let's pray. Father, thank you for this morning, for the opportunity you've given us again to come into this place and to study your word.